Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Karish reporting. North Korea is following a familiar pattern of defiance in response to new international sanctions imposed upon the country for conducting its fourth nuclear test. The latest provocation began Friday morning with Pyongyang firing two medium-range ballistic missiles into the sea. One of the Rodong missiles, which has the potential to reach Japan, appeared to have exploded mid-flight. The launches, which are a violation of multiple UN Security Council resolutions, occurred one day after the United States announced further sanctions against Kim Jong-un's government. The World Health Organization reports that an outbreak of yellow fever in Luanda, the capital of Angola, has now spread to seven other provinces, as well as to the Democratic Republic of Congo and to Kenya. The WHO is calling for a large-scale vaccination campaign to stop the spread of the disease. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The World Health Organization says the number of confirmed deaths from yellow fever in Angola now stands at 146, with 885 suspected cases. The UN agency says outbreaks of yellow fever in an urban setting are generally more dangerous and difficult to contain because the disease can spread easily from one person to another. It says a largely unvaccinated population that is bitten by infected mosquitoes can trigger an epidemic. Vaccination is the most important preventive measure against yellow fever. The mosquito that transmits yellow fever is the same one responsible for the Zika virus, dengue fever, and chikungunya. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For more, log on to voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA. Mohammed Jamal Quais, a 26-year-old American who said he has defected from the Islamic State group, has admitted that he, quote, wasn't thinking straight when he decided to join the militant group in the Middle East this year. He said he made a bad decision to go with a girl and to go to Mosul. In a related story, a U.S. man will spend up to 22 and a half years in prison for trying to recruit terrorist fighters and raise funds for Islamic State. A federal judge in Rochester, New York, sentenced Mufid El-Fege on Thursday. He was caught trying to help two informants to go to Syria in 2014 to join up with IS. U.S. President Barack Obama's trip to Cuba is being anticipated by many as a historic chance to thaw relations with Havana. National Security Advisor Susan Rice says the president will arrive in Cuba Sunday with new regulatory reforms in place that will make it easier for Americans to visit.
We believe that engagement, including greater trade, travel, and ties between Americans and Cubans, is the best way to help create opportunity and spur progress for the Cuban people. And that's why, as part of his visit, the president will meet with civil society leaders, including human rights activists, who give voice to the aspirations of the Cuban people.
Both Democrat and Republican lawmakers will join Obama on the trip, though many in Congress still oppose the trip, as well as the overall thawing of relations. Cuban-American Ileana Ross Leitanen is a congresswoman from South Florida.
The leader of the free world has chosen a legacy shopping photo op, enjoying a baseball game with a murderer and a thug.
Obama's three-day visit will make him the first sitting U.S. president to visit the island in nearly 90 years. Unknown attackers fired rockets at a natural gas plant in southern Algeria on Friday. There were no reports of casualties. In January 2013, Islamist attackers attacked a gas plant in eastern Algeria. About 40 workers were killed then. Wildlife officials in Kenya say that a lion has escaped from the Nairobi National Park and attacked a man on a busy city road on Friday. Mohammed Yusuf has more.
In recent years, the ever-expanding capital, which now counts 5 million people, has threatened the Nairobi sanctuary. Park officials say animal escapes and sittings are not new, but just getting more attention. However, they will be investigating a pattern they have seen in recent months of animals heading into residential areas away from their usual routes. In February, four lions spent a whole day wandering around different residential areas of the city, but no one was injured. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari says security forces will crack down on anyone who incites violence during Saturday's legislative elections. And two new cases of Ebola have been reported in Guinea.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Rwanda, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the French news agency reports the European Union and Turkey have reached a deal to ease the flow of migrants and refugees to Europe. The deal reportedly says all migrants arriving in Greece beginning on Sunday would be sent back to Turkey. Despite the agreement, some EU member states have misgivings about whether the deal is legal and Turkey's human rights record. AFP reports Turkey had demanded faster approval of its request to join the EU, a doubling of refugee aid to nearly $7 billion, and visa-free travel for Turkish citizens. While over 1 million migrants and refugees have arrived in Europe since the beginning of last year, about 4,000 have drowned trying to make the journey.
Migrants and refugees at the Greek-Macedonian border hoped the agreement between the EU and Turkey will benefit them. About 12,000 have been crowded in a camp at the Greek town of Idomeni that was originally built to hold only 1,500. Doctors Without Borders and other aid groups are building more camps to ease the crisis. However, Greece's interior minister today compared the main camp of Idomeni to the Nazi concentration camp at Dachau. Besides being overcrowded, the camp has been flooded and food has been in short supply. In Athens, some protesters hung banners today on the Acropolis criticizing the restriction of the movement for migrants. The signs read, "Open borders, safe passage, and stop wars." Most of the migrants and refugees coming to Europe have traveled from Turkey to Greece, but the other Mediterranean route, used mostly by Africans, is getting busy again. Reuters reports Italian ships today rescued 600 migrants who took boats from Libya. About 1,500 were rescued yesterday. The International Organization for Migration says about 12,000 migrants have landed in Italy so far this year. That's about 2,000 more than the same period last year.
Kenya wildlife officials say a lion that escaped from the Nairobi National Park attacked a man on a busy road in the capital, Nairobi, today. This is the third time in less than a month that lions have escaped from the zoo, causing panic to the city. Mohammed Yusuf has more from Nairobi.
Kenya Wildlife Service Director of Communications Paula Duto says the fugitive lion clawed a 68-year-old man and that the behavior of pedestrians and motorists was to blame.
A crowd that had formed around the lion had made noise. Motorists were hooting. People were taking videos for WhatsApp and other channels. And the lion had become agitated and aggressive and injured one old man.
A video being shared on social media does indeed show commuters hooting continuously on the busy highway and a locust peeking out from behind fences and gates. The national park sits on nearly 12,000 hectares of land. In recent years, the ever-expanding capital, which now counts 5 million people, has threatened the Nairobi sanctuary. Park officials say animal escapes and sittings are not new, but just getting more attention. Officials say during the wet season, animals tend to roam outside the park limits. However, Wildlife Service spokesman Uduto says they will be investigating a pattern they have seen in recent months of animals heading into residential areas away from their usual routes.
It's a new pattern, particularly on the Mombasa Road and Langata Road sides, which are more heavily settled by people and industries. It's something we're investigating to see exactly what's causing this recurrence of the lions coming out on this other side.
In February, four lions spent a whole day wandering around different residential areas of the city, but no one was injured. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa arrived today in Burundi's capital, where he met President Pierre Nkurunziza in efforts to start the dialogue that was relaunched in Entebbe last year. Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
The Inter-Burundian dialogue was relaunched in December at President Museveni's state house in Entebbe, with both the Burundi government and the opposition imposing their own particular conditions. The Burundian government had last year formed a new national dialogue commission that started conducting nationwide talks earlier this year. Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa says he is ready to work with the commission after visiting Ugandan and Rwandan presidents.
I was appointed to help President Museveni and to apply and engage myself more actively in the effort of the East African community to speed up the process of dialogue that has been going on, that has started and has been going on here. So I have visited President Museveni, President Kagame, and today President Nkurunziza, in order to be updated on events over the last 10 years, of their understanding of what the function of this dialogue will be and what the participation of my team will constitute.
The Ugandan president is the East Africa's mediator for the Inter-Burundian dialogue. Meanwhile, the East African Community Heads of State Summit appointed the former Tanzanian president to facilitate the mediation. However, the Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza says he will not engage with opposition members who organized the street protests against him or those whom he says were behind the failed May coup.
L'ingérence du Rwanda et que nous avons des preuves et que nous allons même présenter au niveau de la...
He says the government suspects the involvement of neighboring Rwanda in the country's strife. The president says his government has proof that Kigali is working to destabilize Burundi and has presented all the evidence to the international community as requested, so that even outside dialogue should be considered to restore peace and stability in the country. Last week, Burundi's security forces are said to have arrested a Rwandan soldier who later told the media that he was spying and warned of possible attack by armed groups from neighboring Rwanda. However, the Rwandan government denied the reports and rejected the allegation that the arrested man belonged to its armed forces.
I shall seek his underwriting and those of his fellow heads of state and hope to end any silly speculations about the possibilities of violence, confrontation, or even war between members of the East African community on developments in Burundi or Rwanda or Tanzania or anything like that, because we really are a community and we are neighbors and we must really live together in peace and cooperate and develop together.
However, even with the visit of the newly appointed mediator to facilitate the talks, it's still not clear when the dialogue will be restarted. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Niger is scheduled to hold a second round of voting Sunday to choose a new president. Incumbent Mahamadou Issoufou faces former parliament speaker Hama Amadou. However, Amadou has been in jail since November following allegations of baby trafficking. Despite that, he finished second in the first round of voting last month. Reuters reports an opposition coalition says it will boycott the election runoff. It has raised charges of fraud and mistreatment of opposition candidates. The opposition also has accused President Issoufou of ordering the arrest of its supporters and suppressing dissent. The government describes the criticism as politically motivated.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari says security forces will crack down on anyone who incites violence during Saturday's legislative elections in oil-rich Rivers State. Some voters say they're too scared to cast their ballot. Chris Stein reports with Hilary Uguru in Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Rivers State resident Nata James says he will not be turning up this weekend to cast his ballot in the rerun of local and federal legislative elections.
The politicians, they get ashamed for every year for me.
He says he is not going to come and vote because he fears losing his life. The country's two main political parties have accused each other of inciting violence ahead of this weekend's polls. The All Progressives Congress, or APC party, says dozens of its supporters in Rivers State have been killed in the run-up to the vote. Austin Tam George, a spokesman for the state government, which is controlled by the People's Democratic Party, said the killings were the fault of gang members. He accused the state's former APC governor of inciting violence. A police spokesman declined to comment on the reports of deaths. Livingston Mbembere is a youth leader in the Akukutoru area of Rivers State. He says he has seen people killed and their bodies set on fire in recent days.
Everywhere is tense. Everybody is apprehensive, so it might renew the turnout.
Rivers State and its capital, Port Harcourt, are home to major sectors of Nigeria's oil industry. The country is Africa's largest producer of crude, which brings in about 90% of its export earnings. Sofiri Job Peterside, a sociology teacher at the University of Port Harcourt, says the struggle to control that oil wealth is one reason for the state's do-or-die political atmosphere.
Every political party sees the region as an area where it needs to deploy powers to make sure that it wins the election.
Anyakwe Nsirimovu of the Institute of Human Rights and Humanitarian Law in Port Harcourt says the killings are meant to scare voters and keep them away from the polls.
The whole essence of killing is to put fear into people, to stop people from coming out to exercise their civic responsibilities. And when you do that, when you don't have people at the polling units, of course, you know, politicians can get their way.
The reruns were ordered by a tribunal convened to answer challenges to last year's governorship and legislative elections. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
In Zambia this week, the courts restored the legal immunity of a former leader wanted on corruption charges. The National Assembly had stripped former President Rupiah Banda of immunity so he could face criminal prosecution. But this week, High Court Justice Annie Sitali announced a reversal of the legislator's move. In part, she said, because the National Assembly failed to specify the charges against Mr. Banda. He is officially a member of the former ruling movement for multi-party democracy and served as the country's fourth president from 2008 until 2011. Alexander Mutali is a journalist based in Lusaka. VOA's William Eagle asked him about reaction to the court ruling.
Government's own reaction seems to be one of satisfaction, whereby since they entered into an agreement with the lawyers of the former president, they are comfortable with the outcome. However, civil society organizations and the opposition political parties have not come out to condemn this or to support. What we expect, however, in the next few days is that one or two of them will likely speak against, because they think that the agreement was entered into for the benefit of the ruling party, because the fourth Republican president, Rupiah Banda, is known to be a supporter of the current government. He is not a member, but he supports them. So we expect someone to come out and actually say that it was not in the national interest, but in the interest of the ruling party.
Is this considered by some to be a one-time exceptional case, or are some concerned that it would be setting a precedent that former leaders cannot be prosecuted for corruption?
The restoration of Rupiah Banda's immunity will actually be like a signal being sent to say that the habit or the precedent of removing immunities of former presidents does not mean very well for the country. And by saying that, I mean to say, in 2002, the second Republican president, Frederick Chiluba, had his immunity lifted by the National Assembly so that he could face corrupt charges that he was alleged to have done when he was in office. And the prosecution began, dragged on for over 5 years, but eventually was cleared of those allegations. However, his immunity was not restored until he died in 2011. Now, the difference is, even when it came to removing the immunity of the fourth president, Rupiah Banda, some were concerned that it was not good to keep up the precedent that happened in the removal of the second Republican president's immunity. Some suggested that it's better to leave presidents alone who leave power, you know, without subjecting them to prosecution. However, government went ahead. Now, what has happened is that the fact that the immunity of Rupiah Banda has been restored could mean a new precedent being set of not lifting immunities of former presidents. After this, we don't expect another president to have his immunity restored, because this is going to be like binding for future presidents. It would be even difficult to lift the immunity, because the reason which has been given of allegations differing from charges will have to be very carefully investigated before suggesting lifting immunities of former presidents. So I think that the restoration of the president's immunity could be one way of saying, look, we were wrong to lift the immunity, just like we were wrong in the first place when we first removed the immunity of the second Republican president. Let's stop this and just leave these former presidents alone.
Is it expected to have any effect on the debate in the upcoming August presidential elections?
During campaigns, we expect some to say that the government's decision was not right because it was not in the national interest. Many believe that the immunity, or that government reached an agreement in order that the former president could support the ruling party during the next election, because it is a known fact that in 2015, in last year's snap election, to elect a successor to Michael Sata, who died in office, Rupia Banda played a very key role in ensuring that Edgar Lungu, the current president, won in the election.
That was reporter Alexander Mutali in Lusaka. He was speaking to VOA's William Eagle. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhip, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Reports indicate the European Union and Turkey have reached a deal to ease the flow of migrants and refugees to Europe. A lion that escaped from the Nairobi National Park attacked a man on a busy road in the capital, Nairobi, today. And Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari says security forces will crack down on anyone who incites violence during Saturday's legislative elections. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Two new cases of Ebola have been reported in Guinea. The World Health Organization is sending a team to the southern prefecture of Nzérékoré, where the Ebola cases were confirmed in a rural village. The WHO warns there could be more cases in Guinea. This news comes one day after neighboring Sierra Leone was once again declared Ebola-free. Two new cases had been discovered there as a result. Sierra Leone had to go 42 days without any more cases to be declared Ebola-free once more. The WHO says Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone are still at risk for new cases of Ebola because the virus lingers in some survivors. The largest outbreak in history began in Guinea in December 2013 and claimed more than 11,000 lives.
The World Health Organization reports that an outbreak of yellow fever in Luanda, the capital of Angola, has now spread to seven other provinces, as well as to the Democratic Republic of Congo and Kenya. The WHO is calling for a large-scale vaccination campaign to stop the spread of the disease. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization says the number of confirmed deaths from yellow fever in Angola now stands at 146, with 885 suspected cases. But WHO yellow fever expert Sergio Yactayo, who has just returned from a mission in Angola, says these figures are seriously underestimated.
That is only the point of the iceberg, because it means that we're can detect it only the more severe cases, but there are other cases, and you can multiply this number by 10, for example, to have an idea of the part of the problem.
Most of the deaths and cases are in Luanda, where the outbreak began in early December. Such outbreaks usually occur in tropical rainforests when monkeys infected by wild mosquitoes pass the virus on to other mosquitoes. The infected mosquitoes then bite humans entering the forest. The UN agency says outbreaks of yellow fever in an urban setting are generally more dangerous and difficult to contain because the disease can spread easily from one person to another. It says a largely unvaccinated population that is bitten by infected mosquitoes can trigger an epidemic. Vaccination is the most important preventive measure against yellow fever. Yaktayo says WHO, its partners, and the Angolan Ministry of Health have undertaken a massive vaccination campaign in Luanda, targeting 6.5 million people. He tells VOA this is having positive results.
In Luanda, this urban severe outbreak will be under control in the following days. Luanda, the problem is in the other province, in Angola, and outside of Angola. So the situation is not under control. There are a risk and that we need to consider and we need to prevent other things.
Yaktayo says 100 million people in endemic countries in Africa need to be vaccinated to prevent further outbreaks of yellow fever, but that there is a problem. He says only 25 million doses of the vaccine currently are available, and much of the $200 million needed to cover the vaccines and operational costs has yet to be found. The mosquito that transmits yellow fever is the same one responsible for the Zika virus, dengue fever, and chikungunya. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As research continues into the ill effects of the Zika virus, work continues to find ways to control the spread of the mosquito that carries it. But Brazil, which is at the heart of the outbreak, is having problems doing that. The Associated Press reports that when the first Zika cases were reported in Brazil last May, many cities stopped receiving government supplies of insecticide. It reports that the frontline city of Campina Grande, with a population of 400,000, still had shortages of insecticide last November. And that was after Brazil's president declared Zika a national health emergency. The Aedes aegypti mosquito can lay its eggs anywhere there at small pools of water. While spraying insecticides can help, it also poses environmental risks. The World Health Organization estimates that as many as 4 million people could be infected with the Zika virus by the end of the year. The biggest fear is the link to birth defects and some paralytic disorders.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yisuhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to Africa News Tonight for the latest sports, features, and more coming up next right here on VOA. For the full hour of Africa News Tonight, tune in again at 1800 UTC.
Sunnyside of Sports!
Starting March 21st, the Sunnyside of Sports is expanding to half an hour. Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Tune in starting Monday, March 21st, right here on VOA Africa.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. A lion that escaped from the Nairobi National Park attacked a man on a busy road in the capital today. And Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari says security forces will crack down on anyone who incites violence during Saturday's legislative elections. Coming up, we'll have music from Rwanda. And in our feature segment, a young South African musician wins accolades for her fusion of tribal rhythms. I'm Kim Lewis with Yeheya Skuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Friday, Sunny.
Happy Friday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you are beginning today with World Athletics.
Kim, the 16th IAAF World Indoor Championships in Athletics are taking place this weekend in the northwestern U.S. city of Portland, Oregon. The first two gold medals were awarded Thursday night in the men's and women's pole vault. World record holder Renaud Laviani of France won the men's competition with a height of 6.02 meters. The Frenchman set his world record in 2014 at an indoor meet in Ukraine, where he reached 6.16 meters. Meanwhile, in the women's pole vault final in Portland, Olympic champion Jen Suhr of the United States won her first world indoor title with a gold medal winning height of 4.90 meters. Jen is part of a very strong 58-member USA team that topped the medals table at the last World Indoor Championships in Poland in 2014. With the home crowd cheering them on in Portland, I think the Americans will once again win the most medals. Track analyst Parker Pick Up the Pace Morse says another Olympic champion for the United States is bidding for his third straight world indoor title in the heptathlon.
Ashton Eaton in the men's heptathlon. Eaton has the world record in this event. He's the world record decathlete outdoors and also the defending world and Olympic champion. Eaton really has been just about unbeatable in the multi-events in the last couple of years. And here he's going to be competing just about 2 hours' drive from his training base in Eugene. This is probably as close to a home meet as Eaton is going to see in his career, unless he manages to hang on all the way to 2021 when the World Outdoor Championships will come to Eugene. The Americans are strong in the sprints. Barbara Pierre has the world-leading time in the 60 meters. Mike Rogers is a former world champion in that event. And Trayvon Bromell, a medalist in 100 meters outdoors, the defending champion in the women's 800, Aji Wilson, Boris Berrien in the men's 800. 2 years ago, Boris Berrien was getting $8 an hour flipping hamburgers at McDonald's, and now he is the U.S. national champion at 800 meters and poised to take on the world.
Wow.
Yes, he's a fantastic story. Berrien trains in Big Bear, California with Brenda Martinez, who is an outdoor 800-meter world championship medalist and will be running the 1,500 meters in Portland. Being close to Eugene means that there are a lot of entrants in this meet who are very close to their training bases. There's a training group in Eugene that includes Sheila Reed from Canada, Mo Aman, who is the defending men's 800-meter champion from Ethiopia, Sally Kipyego of Kenya. She's not entered, but she's an outdoor world championship medalist. And obviously the Eatons, both Ashton and his wife, who is a multiple outdoor silver medalist in the women's heptathlon, Breanne Thiessen-Eaton. She is a leading contender for the gold in the women's pentathlon in Portland.
Parker, do you get the sense that most of the athletes are using Portland as a tune-up for the Rio Olympics in August?
Absolutely, especially for athletes like Boris Berrien, who is new to the international scene. This is a chance for them to run and international championships where the stakes are somewhat lower and get a taste of international competition before they need to face that Olympic theater. It's going to be a very loud and enthusiastic atmosphere. Oregon is the hotbed of athletics passion, really, in the United States. There is no place in the United States with as many knowledgeable and passionate fans as Oregon. So there will be a full house, but because the track is 200 meters, not 400 meters, as it is outdoors, there's a real premium not just on speed, but also on tactics, on knowing where to be on the track and when to be there, knowing when to make your move, when to be in front, and how not to get boxed in. And those are all lessons that all of the track athletes in particular will want to learn before they are on the track in Rio.
Finally, Parker, your thoughts on one of the youngest members, maybe the youngest member of the USA team, 18-year-old Vashti Cunningham, daughter of former NFL quarterback Randall Cunningham. She'll be competing in the women's high jump. Do you see her as maybe the next face of American athletics?
She very much could be. She jumped 1.99 meters this season, which is the kind of height that a lot of world-class high jumpers don't reach in their entire career. And she just did that last weekend. There's no chance that she has lost fitness between then and now. She might need to add a few centimeters to really get up into gold medal territory. But again, high jump, much like the indoor track events, has a lot of strategy to it. If she can get to that 1.99 height with very few misses and really put the screws to her other competitors, she could find herself on the podium as a junior. We don't see that much in the U.S. It does happen, but it doesn't happen much in the high jump. So she's got quite a career in front of her now. And if she can keep improving, she doesn't have to improve very much to really be on top of the world. We have not had a world-leading women's high jumper in the USA for decades.
Thanks, Parker. That's track analyst Parker Pick Up the Pace Morse, who's covering the World Indoor Championships in Athletics in Portland, Oregon. Meanwhile, the VOA's Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma, tells us about the total prize money in Portland.
Over $2.4 million is up for grabs as more than 600 athletes begin vying for medals at the IAAF World Indoor Athletics Championships in Portland. Each gold medalist will earn $40,000. The other five finalists will earn $20,000, $10,000, $8,000, $6,000, and $4,000 respectively in descending order. Any athlete who sets a world record will earn a $50,000 bonus. The IAAF clarifies that prize money will only be disbursed after the mandatory doping tests.
You asked for it, and we're delivering more sports.
I love Sunnyside Sports.
Starting March 21st, the Sunnyside of Sports is expanding to half an hour. Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC.
Our African football guru, David Legg, joins us now for a look at recent African goal-scoring highlights in Europe.
Arsenal, their two-year reign as FA Cup holders in England is over, and it's over as a result of African goals. The first of the two in a 2-1 shock away victory at the Emirates Stadium for Watford was scored by Odion Ighalo. He's Nigerian, and he scored early in the second half. And then an unstoppable drive from Guidioro, the Algerian, gave Watford a 2-0 lead. Arsenal pulled one back with 2 minutes left, but it was too little, too late. And a team that will become synonymous with success in the FA Cup were out of the competition. And then we had that all too predictable post-match comment from Arsene Wenger, who said that the better team lost. Every time Arsenal loses a match, the better team loses. But well done then to our African sharpshooters. And Watford now through to the semi-finals. And also through, Sonny, are Everton, Crystal Palace, the match between West Ham United and Manchester United at Old Trafford, ended in a 1-1 draw, so that match will have to go to replay. Max Gradel, the Ivorian who plays for Bournemouth, now he's been out of action for 6 months with a rather serious injury, and he came back and scored one of the goals in a 3-2 win over Swansea City. One of the Swansea City goals came from Modu Barrow, and there was a touch of history to that one. He is the first Gambian to score a goal in the English Premier League. So well done to Modu Barrow. And a name, Sonny, we've said before on the Sunny Side of Sport, keep an eye out for Cedric Bakambu. He was born in France, but his parents come from DR Congo, and that's where he's laid down his international roots. He scored a brace for Villarreal. Unfortunately, it couldn't prevent a 4-2 loss to Sevilla. But that is now 16 goals he has scored in Spain this season. And I think here is a budding star.
Bakambu sure sounds like a budding star, David. That's David Legg, our African football guru, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny, and happy Friday.
Happy Friday. What's trending in the sports world on this Friday, Andrew?
Well, Nike, the big U.S. athletic apparel maker, now a global brand, a global company.
Who dropped Manny Pacquiao.
That's very good. You're referencing way back when we started, so very good. Nike has announced the Olympic uniforms for Team USA, and actually a couple other countries that it produces uniforms for. But they showed those off yesterday, and it created a lot of social media buzz. You had Allyson Felix, an athletics star, sprinter, modeling the women's track and field uniform. Kevin Durant, of course, huge NBA player, modeling the men's basketball uniforms.
Okay.
And Elena Delladon, who is the reigning WNBA MVP, she was modeling the women's basketball uniform. So you had a lot of the different athletes showing those off and creating, like I said, a lot of attention on social media. They look very cool, I have to say.
I don't know about the basketball uniforms, Andrew, but I imagine the track and field outfits are probably aerodynamic in nature.
They are. They actually, for the women's uniform, has sleeves, separate sleeves that you can put on, even to that level of detail, to create more aerodynamics and help these athletes run faster.
Now, Nike, one of the major outfitters of the USA team, what other countries do they outfit in terms of uniforms?
Well, I saw some from Brazil. It was this kind of lime green kind of color for the basketball uniforms. And Canada, similar to the U.S., were a white uniform, just as Canada on the front. The U.S. was a plain white uniform for basketball, just has the athlete's number and just USA on the front. But going back to what you were saying about the aerodynamics and the speed, it's interesting, not just the uniforms themselves looking cool, but the cool technology behind them. Nike said that it actually engineered specific kinds of filaments and threads to use in these uniforms to make them breathable, to make them more aerodynamic. And this, of course, was a controversy in the last Olympics in 2014. The U.S. speed skating team said that they were slowed down because of their uniforms from Under Armour, which is another big company, apparel company here in the U.S. They said that their uniforms actually caused them to lose some of the races. They speculated that it was not properly designed. So interesting that Nike is making a big push on social media saying, look, we put out these great uniforms. They're aerodynamic. They're sleek. We put in a lot of technology and a lot of investment into these uniforms.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. I received a tweet from Parker Pick Up the Pace Morse, who we heard from earlier. Parker is covering the World Indoor Championships in Portland, Oregon. And Parker sent me a video. I believe the way Parker describes him, it's a Kenyan athlete, Caleb Ndiku, the defending champion from Kenya at 3,000 meters. Parker says he might be the only athlete in Portland with his own rap music video. It's titled Run Caleb Ndiku, and I did watch it. It's very lively, Andrew. It's a great video. Lots of shots of Caleb running, too.
Well, Caleb is probably looking to people like LeBron James and other huge stars here in the U.S., or maybe Cristiano Ronaldo, who are athletes and amazingly talented, but they also are involved in maybe acting or fashion, kind of crossover success. So he may be trying to learn from them with this rap video.
And let me give a quick shout out, Andrew, for the rap artist in that video, Machacos Chalo. Machacos Chalo. And I think his first name anyways is where he's from in Kenya, Machacos Kenya. And he's the one that collaborated with Caleb and Deku. So we wish Caleb well as he defends his title this weekend in Portland. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, speaking of Cristiano Ronaldo, speaking of Nike, which we were just talking about, one of the products that they introduced at this event yesterday was something called Hyper Adapt, and it's a self-lacing shoe. You actually put your foot in, and it automatically adjusts to how tight the shoe should be based on the shape of your foot. And Cristiano Ronaldo was one of the first people to get to try this out and actually put an Instagram video out where you see him putting the shoe on and he says, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is a very cool product. So, of course, some great marketing for Nike on behalf of that soccer star.
So, in other words, you don't have to bend down and tie the shoelaces.
He just puts his foot in and you hear a kind of mechanical noise and it apparently adjusts, so he says. But a lot of comparisons on social media to Back to the Future. Of course, they had the self-lacing shoes in that movie, so they're saying, finally, we've arrived at this point. It's become a reality.
Now, can you give us a price on those self-lacing shoes, Andrew?
You know, I didn't see a price just yet, but I'm willing to bet it is not cheap. We'll leave it at that. We'll just say that.
Anything else trending, Andrew, in the sports world?
Well, of course, the other big story here in the U.S., the NCAA tournament. Already, as we talked about earlier in the week, hashtag brackets busted. My bracket is fairly busted. Some of the upsets I picked didn't come to fruition. Some of the teams I thought would win were upset, like Baylor defeated by Yale. That was a big upset yesterday. Purdue being defeated by the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. And I just do want to point out, though, that I'm in good company, and anyone else out there who filled out a bracket that didn't maybe succeed, ESPN said that out of 13 million brackets that were filled out here in the U.S. through their bracket challenge, only about 14,000 are still perfect.
That's
0.1%.
Wow. Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yahaeus Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
All righty. Thank you, Sonny, and we wish you lots of success and a lot of fun with your new show coming up. And you can listen to the new Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 UTC and 1830 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
Coming up, a young South African musician winning accolades for her fusion of tribal rhythms. But first,
some
music.
So you guys are...
Here is Mary Martin from Rwanda with Yoba Yoba.
Batatu twibera mu mataba twiragiri nkazi wacu akadukamira yera tukanywa tukanyurwa tukitetera umukuru muri twe akabinajorwa umukurikiye akabinarumikwa nanjye umuto muri bo maze kuba umugabo udaterwa kundi
mwashenge
Yeah.
utangira kuryana byato nato bazo tubonye bikamurenga bikamuyobera bikamushobera sogokuru yaje kuducira umugani nako n'umufindo mbambaroga afata inkone eshatu arazibangikanya azibohesha umurungu ukomeye ati bana banjye mumaze kuba abagabo ngaho nimuvunaguriza inkoni ndeba bana banjye uburiza muri twe arazisingira zimunaniye zikikiriza ubuheta nangiuye ture nizana mwereke araho dufatanije twazivunagura inkoni zitubera ibamba ziratunanira fata azikuraho wa murunga arazikonyagura imwe ku yindi tukwara tugira tumumaze kubona abana banjye nimuguma hamwe ntawe uzabatera nimuguma kuryana bazabavunagura nk'izi nkoni
Manny Martin from Rwanda with Yoba Yoba.
Well, a young South African musician is winning accolades for her fusion of tribal rhythms from around the world. Courtney Gibson blends Western instruments like electric guitar with traditional African instruments like the djembe and other indigenous instruments like the Australian Aboriginal didgeridoo to create exceptional sounds. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Gibson says she uses instruments like the didgeridoo to mimic the sounds of Africa's animals, like the slow, violent growl of a lion on a nighttime hunt.
I try and pull those sounds into the didge, and the drums obviously help a lot because drums is part of Africa. The beat has got the rhythm of Africa and everything that we are.
Her love of Africa, its nature and its people, was inspired by her upbringing on a farm in the mountains of Mpumalanga province. Here, villagers taught her to make music using waste materials from a local dump.
I kind of picked up a pool pipe and started playing a pool pipe because I didn't have money for a didgeridoo, as us South Africans don't much have money, so...
As a child with pool pipe in mouth, Gibson dreamed of one day owning a real didgeridoo.
I just liked the sound, always liked the sound. I always found it had a nice tribal feel to it.
As Gibson has grown as a musician, so has her small collection of instruments, helping her create some of South Africa's most unique contemporary music. Gibson says no matter what she ever achieves as an artist, she'll never come close to her hero, the great South African folk singer and songwriter, Vusi Mahlasela.
Let's take this beat and put it right inside of this evil monster so we can learn to be free.
She recently saw Mahlasela at a festival and approached him with a request.
Can I please play you a song? And he was kind of a bit shocked. He just said, okay, play it. And I played on his guitar. And it was the most amazing thing, gave me a big hug afterwards.
Like Mahlasela, Gibson makes music with a conscience.
And how can you just sit there and say you don't know?
While most white South African musicians try to sound like American and British indie rock bands, Gibson's art remains firmly rooted in the bush of Mpumalanga.
I don't see why I should be something that I'm not. I'm African, I'm born here. My soul and everything inside me is African.
Many of her songs reflect her concern about the destruction of Africa's environment.
Africa, here you come with me.
Gibson says she doesn't want to be famous. She knows she'll never win awards playing what she calls her weird music. All that matters, she says, is that she's true to herself, true to Africa, and true to the rhythms alive inside her. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up with this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer Bill Workinger and our engineer Charleston Mock, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
United States Ambassador to Cameroon, Michael Hoza, underscored the importance of transparency and strong institutions as he joined 20 ministers of the government of the Republic of Cameroon this month at an anti-corruption forum in Yaoundé. On March 2nd, the minister in charge of the Supreme State Audit Office, Ms. Emba Acha Fomundum Rose, opened the Pan-African Conference on the Prevention of and Fight Against Fraud and the Misappropriation of Public Funds, where she called for the elimination of corruption and the promotion of good governance and transparency. In his remarks, Ambassador Hoza said, "Preventing and fighting fraud and the misappropriation of public funds is vital for the development of Cameroon. The United States has learned its own lessons on this subject throughout our history, and we learned that building strong institutions was essential to combat corruption. We are still learning." Ambassador Hoza further noted that this is not a struggle that is alien to America. That is why we believe it is essential to share lessons learned. Corruption steals directly from the pockets of citizens, be they American or Cameroonian, or from anywhere else in the world for that matter. To truly make a nation's economy flourish and for its potential to be unleashed, said Ambassador Hoza, corruption must be reduced and eliminated. Otherwise, corruption is one of the key guarantees that the cycle of poverty continues for nations. The ambassador also observed, "Make no mistake, the public is always watching and judging public officials. Perceptions can equal realities to them, and therefore public opinion and freedom of the press matter, and it matters a lot for all democracies." The United States has been partnering with Cameroon in anti-corruption efforts for the past 10 years, sharing experience and strengthening partnerships with key institutions and citizens. Over the past 3 years, U.S.-Cameroon cooperation against the misappropriation of public funds has increased through collaboration with the Ministries of Public Contracts, Finance, and Justice, and also with specialized agencies such as the Public Contracts Regulatory Agency and the National Agency for Financial Investigation. The United States is proud to stand with its partner Cameroon and other African nations to help those nations guarantee the integrity and transparency that good government demands.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And we're delivering more sports.
I love Sunnyside Sports.
Starting March 21st, the Sunnyside of Sports is expanding to half an hour. Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Tune in starting Monday, March 21st, right here on VOA Africa.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.